Good morning, everybody. This is IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I am Tex Homer. That is Paul Wadlington. We are excited to hang out with you guys today. The number one spot in all of Texas football to get your news. InsideTexas.com. $1 for 4 months. Hell of a deal. And also, guys, spring sports. We got baseball news, number one in the country. And also, what's really cool, Academy is sponsoring the Inside Texas Ultimate Tailgate Giveaway this Friday. Make sure to come. It's free to enter all of this stuff, but you can just put your name in a little box and you could potentially win the Blackstone Griddle, Yeti Cooler, 10 by 10 foot Texas Canopy, University of Texas Folding Chairs, Yeti Ramblers, all for just hanging out. So if you guys go to InsideTexas.com, you can see the location of the tailgate, all of that. It's at the dish. It's I think it's behind center field or something like that. But check it out, guys. You can win all that for just coming to hang out. And the festivities should start around 3 and the games around 7. Texas number one in the nation. And A&M had a really rough start, but they've won like the last 9 out of 10 or something like that. So they're really hot right now. Should be fun. Sandman, good morning. Charles, good morning. Travis, good morning. Roaster, good morning. AR, good morning. All right. We are going to talk portal additions and then also Texas trying to eye our personal draft record, which I think will be fun too to go through the guys. So, Paul, we also have another defensive tackle that's going to be on campus today. But how do you feel about the latest grabs? You feel like we've been doing the work we needed to do?
Yeah, I actually just wrote an article about this on Inside Texas. Wow. And we have 9 defensive tackles now on the roster. And that may seem excessive, but let me offer some thoughts. So Sark has shown that he's had a willingness to go light at the skill positions to load up on the lines of scrimmage. And I love that. It's one of the things that you love about Sark because he doesn't fit the stereotype of the offensive wunderkind, right? Who's all concerned about running more plays and scoring more points and wants to get the ball back. He's about a complete football team, and he likes the lines of scrimmage. He understands that's where football games are won. And so we're going to devote a lot of spots to that. So defensive tackle, why do you want to have a bunch of bodies? Well, in the absence of Byron Murphys, who are complete guys, what you are allowed to do is kind of play different styles to different opponents. Also, defensive tackles, pretty high bust rate in general.
Yeah, scientifically proven.
Scientifically proven. So sometimes that's their own self-selection on or off the field. Sometimes it's the coach's selection. The key is defensive tackles don't stick around and eat up a scholarship if they're not working out. So you could start with 9 or 10 on your roster, and by next spring, we'll have 6 or 5. So that's just how it works. You let the Darwinian processes work. And also, there's no penalty. There's no chemistry penalty at defensive tackle. You could play 5 or 6 guys reasonably in a rotation. You know, you go in and say, hey, I want maniacal effort for your 19 snaps in this football game. You're going to give me 3 to 5 snaps every quarter, and I want those to be maniacal effort. And if you can do that, you can get by with pretty average guys playing really hard and sort of playing above their heads. Because that guy would get exposed if he played 50 snaps, right?
Right.
Kind of like the NBA. You know, they're like, oh, he's 6th man of the year. Why doesn't he start? You know, and suddenly the guy starts and all of his production actually goes down, right? So it's kind of like that for defensive tackle. We're going to just throw numbers at the problem until we solve it. And I think that's what we're doing. We're also trying to fill, frankly, a 2-year gap where Bo Davis did us no favors on the recruiting trail. Didn't recruit enough bodies, and the guys he identified didn't pan. So we're not just trying to do 1-year rentals, which, you know, obviously the Travis Shaw, Cole Brevard fits. We're trying to get some sophomores and juniors to get in the pipeline.
Yeah, we have to backfill.
We're trying to buy a year to get that really promising young freshman class up to speed.
Yeah.
They'll be good to go next year, but you don't want to throw true freshmen out there at defensive tackle, at least not for extended snaps.
Yeah, if we can get that freshman class going next year, Alex January, a year older, now we're looking good. But yeah, Bo, for whatever reason, did not do us well. And then he also took transfers too, on top of not recruiting for us. So that's tricky. How do you feel about the Syracuse guy coming in?
Good. You know, I have not watched him. I did look him up on PFF, which, you know, whatever you think about PFF, it gives you a decent baseline. He was a negligible pass rusher, pretty good run stopper. Syracuse's defense, I do know overall, was horrendous, but, you know, he was a true freshman starting. He's going to improve. Obviously, he's a guy that we like. And if you look at the list of suitors, you know, a lot of people are going after him. I love the idea that we're trying to build out freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors at that position and not just try to do this panicky one-year rental thing every year as we try to, you know, get that freshman class to be juniors. So, you know, Justice Terry, Sharma, those guys, Myron Charles, they'll come along. Mm-hmm. But also know that, you know, at least one of them is going to bust. That's just the nature of defensive tackle.
I do wonder about bust rate, how that changes with the portal, right? Is because the portal is self-selecting for players that have stuck around longer. So I do – because we were looking – when we say we know they have a high bust rate, someone did a really good job of basically going back through all the recruiting classes and seeing who panned out. And defensive tackles have a horrible – the number one who's actually most likely to pan out, get to the NFL, is the athlete position.
Yeah.
So what was a fun finding, because it's always a position of like, well, what is it? Should we even take him? Because we don't know what he is. Well, it turns out just pure athletes end up going to the NFL a lot faster. Turns out the NFL likes testing. And what is a pure athlete going to do? Test well.
What's really frustrating for me is a lot of fans and even some recruiting guys who should know better. They love that a guy only played cornerback in high school.
Yeah.
And they'll penalize the guy who was the starting quarterback, the starting safety, returned kicks, played the oboe at halftime, you know, did concessions. And the funny thing is, if you only play cornerback in high school, you're telling me you're limited as an athlete. If you didn't at least get some snaps at wide receiver, running back, running, you know, option quarterback or returning kicks, you're probably a dude who can't catch and you probably have no ball skills.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a weird, like, lack of understanding of projection in football. So when people look at Jelani McDonald and they go, I don't know, he plays everything. Who knows what he'll play? Yeah. It's like, dude, you're not following the plot. It's like watching a Netflix show with your girlfriend and you keep having to pause it every 10 minutes. Why is he angry?
or they're asking you questions. You're like, I haven't seen this either. I'm not psychic. I don't know where this goes.
Do you think he's mad at her? Yeah. I don't know. Let's watch and find out.
Yeah. But that's what's interesting. So athlete projects well. DT doesn't.
Edge does as well.
Yeah, Edge does as well.
If you're a five-star Edge, you have a pretty high probability of making it to the NFL.
Yeah.
But DT, they have like a 50% bust rate.
What do you think strategy-wise you do with defensive tackle? Take good young talent and then supplement with the portal? It kind of seems wide
receiver. What we're doing. Yeah. It's exactly what we're doing, and we throw numbers at it. And ideally, you just go with the flow. The problem is the portal won't always provide, and the few DTs that do enter that are high quality are going to demand a premium. So, you know, you want to kind of have a combo of your own homegrown guys, and then you want to have guys that you pursue in the portal. I will say that there's a greater infrequency of lower level defensive tackles showing out and then elevating. So the badass defensive tackle from Jackson State is more rare than the badass defensive back from, you know, Pittsburgh State in Kansas, who just was under recruited and he put on 35 pounds in college. And suddenly this guy could elevate and play. It happens less often with defensive tackles. You know who it happens with quite a bit? Tight ends and offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Just because they grow into their bodies late, they get athletic late, they get more coordinated, they get in the weight room and their body kind of like comes together. So yeah, defensive tackles are a rare breed. And we've been very spoiled of late with an amazing cycle of them, all homegrown, all home developed.
Which I don't know if that even exists anymore, because it's like, I mean, they would as like a three-star in developing them, but like getting a five-star, and that five-star is not, you know, our players have this tendency to show out like year four and year five. Well, what if you get a quote-unquote five-star and you're paying X dollars for him and he's not showing out till year four? I mean, he's going to be gone. So it's like you almost – there's this weird – I was talking about this yesterday with Ian with offensive tackle that it's bothering me. We were talking about Brandon Baker. his NIL versus, like, you know, we're like, why is he not starting year two? And to me, it's like we've sped up these guys' trajectories because of the finances behind it that I don't know if it's good or makes sense. So that's what I wonder with defensive tackle, if we're going to be like trying to force these guys into their position so fast because of their cap, or like it seems like the trenches are getting – you're expected to do fourth-year player stuff in year two now.
Yeah, I mean, your NIL tag, it's like the NFL, right? You're going to be greatly resented if you come in with a huge contract and you kind of suck.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you remember the Cowboys
draft. I remember the Cowboys.
Yeah. They drafted Carver from Arizona State.
Yeah.
Do you remember that guy?
Mm-mm.
He was their first round draft pick. He came into camp, and all the Cowboy players were like, he's not good.
Yeah.
And he basically, I think it was Shante Carver, he didn't even start for them, but he's making big money sitting on the bench. That creates a lot of resentment in the locker room, and it's just wasted money, right?
Right.
So that's one of my concerns with the running back room. You know, to be direct, Cedric Baxter, if he can't play, that's wasted money. And it's at a position where you don't want to waste money. So, you know, that's going to be something that you've got to figure out. And you kind of also look at the market is, are there fairly cheap, good running backs available from lower levels or other schools? And the answer is always yes. So,
but that's also the tricky part is I feel like you're never going to get that like fourth year balling out player. And I get there's financial realities to this, but it seems like, yeah, it becomes so like financially centered that you're like, hey, if he's not producing in year two, whatever, cut him loose. You're never going to get that breakout in year four anymore. It just seems like the system's incentivized like this rapid acceleration of getting on the field.
Yeah.
And at all positions. And so,
well, I mean, if a guy deserves being on the field, great. But you're talking about the developmental guys. And I think you just have to negotiate their NIL accordingly.
Yeah.
Like, we signed you as a freshman five-star based on your potential. It's year three. You're a redshirt sophomore. You're not playing a lot. We're not paying you that. So if you need to transfer, cool. Right. We still have a vision for you here. We think you're going to be good. But we're paying you to sit on the bench, and that ain't flying here. And if a guy can't hear that message, it's probably a good self-selection anyway. It's pro football now, man.
It is. I know there's still some mentality that I have with it, but it's the reality. I also think you do end up screwing up some of your late, like, you know, what if we did that with Tavondre Sweat? And Sweat wasn't a five-star, so this isn't a great example. Right. But like a lot of our defensive tackles did not show their ceiling until the last possible second. And if we're churning roster that fast, it feels like we would have got rid of a lot of those guys.
Well, I would say, though, they didn't. Interestingly, like Murphy and Tavondre Sweat didn't demand NIL until they deserved their NIL.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like they were also three stars. Right. So it's like it's not a one to one what I'm doing here. So I get that. But it's also that's what I worry about, that even like we've done that a couple, like I'm throwing up a name, David Abiara for like SMU. It feels like with how quick we churn rosters, and I don't know what he's done since. That's just a name where I liked his traits. It seems like, first off, Sark churns his roster really fast. If I show you the seniors and juniors, like if you're not doing your thing by pretty much sophomore, it's like, hey, TCU's got a spot, SMU's got a spot pretty quick. It just seems like we are streamlining this and we're not going to have a lot of even potential for late round risers because they won't even be there to rise.
I don't know. I mean, the Gunnar Helms of the world are still going to happen because until you get your opportunity, you're not going to make big NIL. Right. So he was getting the burnt ends NIL stuff. He was getting, you know, I'm sure he was making some cash and more than happy, more than I was making in college. Right. Yeah. You know, doing my $6 an hour construction or whatever I was doing.
Delivering for favor.
That's right. But when he played, he hit, and then he made some money doing it. So, I mean, there's still going to be situations where that happens. Look, if you're a super talented young guy, you get a big NIL payout to come here. You don't really do anything for a couple of years. What do you want us to do with you? We're not going to pay you more than the starters. So you can take a cut and learn and humble yourself a little, or you can haul ass. And I don't really I mean, what do you want Sark to do? I don't really care.
That's what I'm saying is there's really not an alternative here. Like if you're running a business, you're running a business, you know, but it's like, yeah, I just worry about the longer curve guys kind of like this, but Alfred showed like incredible day one, like that Colorado game with Alfred Collins in the, that was crazy. But that's the tricky part is just we've sped up this timeline really, really fast. And I think there's going to be benefits to it, but I also think there's going to be some short-sightedness to it as well. So I don't know if you're
I don't think it's short-sighted. It's you're managing a roster. I mean, like I've said many times, you'll know we're really good when guys that leave us become all Big 12, become all ACC. You know, Xavier Alford was a really good player for Arizona State. He didn't get the field. He didn't get on the field with us. So he had to move on. I mean, it's just, there's not, it's like, there's not, this is just what it is now. I mean, we're going to churn good players and they are going to blossom elsewhere. And the idea is that, well, we're starting Makuba, Taff, Jelani McDonald, and guys like that. So it's a big shrug. And that's the whole point. Nick Saban wasn't weeping because Alvin Kamara went to Tennessee and was really good. He just shrugged and said, I've got an All-American starting at running back, whatever.
Yeah, I think mine is just like a weird curve where like, say X, and also this is a hypothetical player. So I realize my argument here is not incredibly strong when I'm going to hypotheticals. But like, say you kick off a year two player, hey, go to Arizona State. Because you have three guys ahead of him that are look like better options. But by year four, that player is better than the three guys that were ahead of him. You know what I'm saying? Like there's some guys that are naturally going to hit later on their curve. And I don't feel like we're giving that trajectory kind of across the sport broadly. We're allowing that trajectory to play off. It's like we're just like letting you see, you go here. No, you need to go to a lower level, something like that. So my thing is like, what if this is not with our safeties, but what if Alfred was ended up better than our safeties in year four, but he wasn't better in year two type of thing?
So what?
Exactly. What are you going to do?
Who cares? I mean, the NFL deals with this all the time. You have your last cuts and you'll have a guy that the coaches are like, this guy is going to be awesome. He doesn't quite understand the game yet.
Yeah.
But we don't have room in our roster for him. They cut him. The Jets or the Patriots pick him up. And what do you know? He spends a year getting developed on practice squad. And then he comes out and he's Wayne Corbett, right? And he is a good NFL player from Hofstra, right?
Yeah.
It's just how it is. I mean, you just sort of deal with it. You know, the idea is you don't want to boot Arch Manning and then you're starting Trey Owens, right? That's the nightmare scenario. Obviously, quarterback, there's a little bit of different calculus. The point is we've actually done a good job here. Sark has done a good job figuring out who's going to hit and who isn't. We're going to make mistakes where we'll look at a guy who left and we'll say, man, he's actually better than the guy we have now. Oh, well. And if that happens a lot, you're in trouble. But it hasn't happened to us yet. I mean, Xavier Alford was at parity with our starting safeties.
Right.
And it's kind of a big shrug. Like, hey, sorry, it didn't work out here.
Yeah, it's not even – yeah, it's a global trend that I'm noticing. It's not that's why I'm struggling to argue that, like, happening against Sark, because Sark's also taken developmental guys. Like, their development's been awesome. We're about to talk about the NFL draft. Those weren't all five stars. So Sark's also been able to take longer curve guys. I think it was mostly in my mind, too, because, like, David Stone, right? That was a good example of this kind of going haywire. So that's where – and it's mostly trench guys, man. I just think we're – in – the five star is never going to – you're never going to talk them down in year three, you know, of like, hey, take the pay cut. You kind of see what happens there too. So,
yeah, the David Stone thing is bad because you don't want to get in the position where you teach your roster, go in the portal, and we'll cut you a better deal.
Yeah.
And I think that's what OU's takeaway here is this guy was irritated – declared for the portal, and then OU gave him more money or did something to placate him. I don't think you want to teach your players that's an option. That's a negotiating tactic. So maybe it's a one-off, but there's a reason Sark says, hey, if you go in the portal, you're gone. Like, I wish you well, but we're not going to play that game here.
Yeah, because it's too effective of a tool. You have to just cut off that tool completely of like, hey, you can't do that. All right, guys, before we keep going, some cool stuff here, y'all. Academy Sports and Outdoors is your new home for Jordan. Gear up today and take flight on the court, off the court, and above the court. Unleash your greatness with head-to-toe Jordan gear for the entire family. Available in-store and at academy.com. Elevated styles and shoes for everyone. Unstoppable value every day. Plus, Academy offers easy ways to shop and save time, like free one-hour in-store or curbside pickup on academy.com orders. Or choose same-day delivery powered by DoorDash. You can order at 4 p.m. and get it by 8 p.m. Check out our full Jordan selection today at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Jordan Brand, the coolest.
Yes, Sadir Mitchell will be your interesting test case. Mm-hmm. The problem is guys like him, it doesn't matter where they start. The light, if it ever turns on, doesn't turn on until their third school. Like they finally get it through their thick head that, oh, like it's me. I need to try harder, or I need to lose 35 pounds, or in the weight room, I actually need to do the lifts and not jack around. So, you know, that's just how it is. And it doesn't even matter where you start. It'll be, there's like a humbling process as you go down levels that eventually you realize, hey, it's me. I'm the problem. Not to do a Taylor Swift song here.
Coach Top, I agree. It's a case-by-case basis. I wouldn't do a blanket rule. For instance, if Arch Manning went in the portal, I would not continue my if you go in the portal, you're gone
rule. Good riddance. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, I would definitely not. I'd be calling lawyers, maybe crying, hyperventilating at times. But, yeah, I agree. It's not as simple as a blanket rule, Coach Top. And you saw with David Stone, sometimes you get called on your bluff there. And also, man, the players really liked David Stone, so that was causing some issues there. That was just handled poorly, and I don't think it was David Stone that handled it poorly from my rough knowledge of the situation. Got a frog in my throat, dude.
You gotta hydrate, man.
Apparently, dude. All right. I had a good segue to tight end earlier, but we kept going. So just take that and imagine that I just did a really good segue to tight end. And then how do you
Hey, let's get our in post.
Yeah.
That's producer what, to
yeah, cut we'll it. Edit it after the live. So what do you – we got injuries. I thought that was really important grab. Talk about a player, right? You were talking something about longer curve development, but injuries was a walk-on. And then I was looking at his – Instagram or something, but he was a multi-sport athlete too, but I guess he just didn't meet the tangibles, and so he put on the weight and stuff like that. So injuries, hell of a player, and I keep harping on this, he has a 90% plus catch rate. That's like unheard of. Now he's not a super deep receiving tight end. It's a lot of kind of screeny level stuff, so that's going to make it higher, but still, man, 90% regardless of the offense you're in is pretty unheard of as far as reliability. So I don't think he's a great blocker or anything, but as far as a steady receiving tight end, man, I love that pickup.
Yeah, he's got really good hands. He's got a good feel for space. He's got a good feel for walling guys off and just using his body to grab a contested catch. He is not as athletically dynamic as Gunnar Helm or Jatavion, but he's good enough athletically. Doesn't break a lot of tackles. He's not going to hurdle guys. He's not going to run through guys. But he knows where to settle into space, and he's got dynamite hands. Correct. So if you guys remember a tight end from back in the day, the Makovic era, Pat Fitzgerald, he was kind of a smaller tight end, but like the most phenomenal hands. I mean, just he would routinely make just sick catches. Yeah. And based purely on that, he was a really effective college tight end just because – his hands were so freaking good, and he knew where to find space. So you could just throw him a really poor ball, and he'd still dig it out of the ground or go up and get it. And I think that's what this guy's going to offer for us. He's not going to offer like a lot of dynamism. Like, you know, with Gunnar Helm early in the year, you were like, oh my God.
Running
like,
down the sidelines, hurdling guys.
Yeah, or like just dropping shoulders on dudes and breaking three tackles and, you know, or even hitting him on the run. And he'd turn a little 8-yard slant into a 25-yard gain. I don't think this guy is going to do a lot of that. I think he's more possession guy. And that's useful because I think we're going to really need a chain mover for this offense. I don't really know that we have a guy outside who's the reliable third and sixth guy. So,
well, what's also interesting, like you said, injuries in Mosley, right? Those are two like reliable, that's a reliable slot receiver, tight end plays in the slot. Both of those guys are kind of the chain movers, going to be where they said they're going to be. They're going to catch it. They're going to find space. So it's interesting that the evals that Sark has done has actually been, you know, not somebody that's running, you know, four ones like Sark likes. These guys have been actually more of like, hey, Arch, if it gets sketchy in the pocket, he's going to be where you think he's going to be, and he's going to catch it.
Yeah, he's going to be a guy that I think will really excel in zone coverages. Mm-hmm. And then also, everyone's running that two cover shell, and they're going to run that against Arch because
he throws people, deep
on film that Arch likes to throw it deep.
Yeah.
And so what they're going to try to do is make us an execution offense, execute underneath. And so that's a guy who can release, get up the field, turn around, catch the ball, and stumble forward and get you 9 yards, right?
Yeah.
And that's very helpful. It gets things moving, especially in combination with your run game. If you can get that, if you can get your run game going and your tight end game going off the run when they're running that too high shell, you're getting 5-10 yard gains, and it's not high execution football. It's not real hard, right?
Yeah.
And so that, and you know, same thing with Emmett Mosley, right? Strong guy, good hands, turns around, knows where to get it. I think where we'll be challenged, and there's only a couple of teams that will be able to do this to us, but when we go to Georgia, they're going to man us up and they're going to say, we don't think you can get open.
Yeah.
And that will be interesting. So I think that's why we want one more portal receiver, or we need a guy to really like develop and turn into a problem. So, you know, you watch the Eagles play and people go one high because they're worried about Saquon Barkley and Hurts running the ball. It's AJ Brown automatic down go ball down the sideline. And if it misses, they run it again because they know they're going to hit it and it's going to be worth six. So that's what Texas has to prove. We're not sure we have that guy on the roster yet. Like, I don't know. We'll see. We're going to see. We need a guy to win the ball down the field or threaten down the field, like getting wide open. Like,
I feel like DeAndre Moore is going to be able to do that with Arch. No, he's a slot player, so it's different than being outside. That matters too.
Well, he and Mosley have to figure out.
Yeah. It's up to DeAndre Moore move outside and Mosley get the slot. Do we get a new receiver in from the portal? And none of this conversation matters. I mean, but that's the raw materials are interesting. It's just like trying to figure out how it works.
Hey, pull up the comment from Travis Acton because I think it's a good one.
The injuries on David
Thomas. Jack injury is going to be Arch's David Thomas. He could be like, you know, David Thomas is Vince Young's security blanket, no question. David Thomas, a much better athlete than injuries. Go back and watch David Thomas run. Like, David Thomas was fast and really good at getting the ball in the air. And, you know, he was a guy that teams were really scared to put a linebacker on because he could run deep. But, yeah, I mean, that USC game, what did David Thomas caught 10 balls? I mean, just
– also what I worry about with, like, zone-settling tight ends is Sark's not huge on that.
Yeah, you know, like,
he's going to be – he's going to have to be, but yeah, he still doesn't, you know.
And so we're going to try to throw it deep, and that's going to create some space. And yeah. So you're going to have to run some settle routes. I mean, you could hit him on a slant. It's the same, you know, concept. The point is, after the catch, he's not going to do a lot. If there's no one in front of him, he'll keep running. Like, that's great. So, because I'm already anticipating he catches a 60-yarder because a guy falls down, and people are like, oh, what about that? It's like I'm talking about like creating after the catch, either running through people, running around them, or jumping over them, right? He's not that kind of athlete like a David Thomas or Gunnar Helm, but he is super reliable, and he knows how to use his body to grab a contested ball on a key down. So,
yeah. And his highlights, some of the balls were poorly thrown too, and that's what I liked is like he was able to like bobble or reach behind him like – that's going to, man, on like a third and six, that's going to matter, dude.
Well, the thing to know about Cal, the reason he did get a lot of attention, he caught a lot of balls, is they had really poor outside receivers. Yeah. So Mendoza, like, he actually was a pretty good quarterback for them, but they just did not have options outside. They'd get shut down. And so then they were always trying to manufacture stuff with the tight end and their running backs. So, you know, kind of an interesting offense.
So how, what is, I know how Ian feels about Wingo. Ian feels that Wingo is like very impressive athlete, but he's not there yet in his releases and that kind of stuff. Is that what you're kind of talking about?
Yeah. I mean, Wingo needs to show he can win balls downfield.
And do you mean like win contested catches, or you mean win off the line and therefore
win the route? I don't care how he does it.
Okay.
Like release down the field and win. Either have two steps in front of the defender or have the defender on you and you rip the ball from him and you keep running. Right. What he's good at are, you know, athlete sorts of things, screens, slants, stops where he catches it and then turns upfield and runs. What we need him to do are like posts, flies, that kind of stuff. That's where he'll really grow as a receiver. By the way, he's going to be a sophomore. So there's still an opportunity for all this to happen. I mean, he's a great athlete and he's a hard worker. So, but you know, there's some element of just, you have that feel for being able to track a ball, stuff like that. But his releases will get better. All that stuff will get better, but he has got to be the guy. Like he's got to win the route, real routes downfield, not athlete type, you know,
correct
gadget stuff,
skill-based winning.
Yes.
Yeah. And if it, and then versus the top of the competition, right? So it's got to be able to scale versus a Georgia or something like that. But I know the fans immediately push back and we're like, we need an outside receiver. And everybody's like, Ryan Wingo. So it's like, I always like you guys to clarify what you guys are talking about.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, he's a sophomore. I mean, he's had a whole year and a whole offseason to get better in these traits. And there's no reason to think that he won't. But, you know, it's no guarantee that it will happen.
Well, especially when you get injured during the spring, right?
That's right. I
mean, that wasn't ideal. But also the change of quarterback, I think, is going to matter significantly there too.
Yeah. And think about the structure of last year's offense. It was started as Bond-ish, right? Number one. That quickly changed. And then it was Golden number one, Helm number two, clearly number two.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty interesting. I think we'll miss Matthew Golden quite a bit. I would have loved to have him on this team.
I'm so dumb. I was like, man, I think Golden should come back. And then he gets first round mocks. I don't know anybody that said Golden's going to be a first rounder, but no one, you couldn't have got it right. But it was just,
man, what a great story for us to tell, though.
What a great story. What a great, like, watch him in interviews, man. Golden just gets it, man. Like, he's just a smart dude. He just handles things really well. And, like, you know, you come in, right? And Bond's like the media number one, the Sark number one, that kind of stuff. And he's like, all right, I'm just going to keep working routes here and meeting with Sark to learn the offense. And he's one of those rare examples. Coaches always lie. They're like, just put your head down, man. It'll work out for you, which is not true. But then, because there's some real things there. But he was the example of doing that correctly. Paul, what's another example of doing the right thing?
Well, I want to talk to you about a golden figure in the mortgage world, and that's Gabe Winslow. You give him a call, 832-557-1095. Why? Over two decades in the industry, former National Merit Scholar. He's got a law degree. This guy is phenomenal at what he does. He's also a broker, Connor. And what that means is he goes and shops your loan and your situation to 60, 70 different lenders. If he works for a big bank, Chase, Wells Fargo, fill in your bank, who, by the way, keeps bankers' hours, the mortgage guys, they shop it to exactly one outfit, their own. Who do you think is going to get you a better deal? Who do you think is going to allow more competitive bidding? We live in a capitalist society. I don't know about you, Connor, but what I want...
Not me.
You're a socialist.
Yeah.
You're a Trotskyite.
Yes.
I want to let those forces work on my behalf, and you want Gabe Winslow being your rep, taking care of your deal. Give him a call. 832-557-1095. And if you go to mortgagesbygabe.com, he's got a feed of all of the Inside Texas channels, the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, which I do with Randy Boone, and a bunch of other Texas media. So you could make that your homepage. He keeps it constantly updated. And it's also a place where he writes about mortgages. So give him a call. Really good dude.
Thank you, Gabe, as always. Paul, are you ready to go forward into the NFL draft?
I am. I think there's a huge demand in the NFL for 6 foot one and a half, 220 pound middle-aged men.
Mm-hmm.
Run up. I think I could rattle off about a 5'2 right now, 5'3.
Yeah, but you're a real coach on the field, dude. That's a difference.
I would pull a hamstring. Here's the thing. I am a coach on the field and that I know ball a little bit. I'm kind of also a locker room lawyer. So if I don't like our direction, I'm not going to commit. I might have some poisonous seeds. I might be like, does coach know what he's doing?
How much are you guys making? I heard Ohio State's paying a little
bit. Yeah. So I'd be
over to Ohio State
to the roster.
Yeah. All right. Let me pull this up here. So we're going for our school record, 15 guys drafted, which would tie Georgia's.
Crazy.
Which is crazy.
Didn't LSU – oh, they had 14, right? The Joe Burrow national title team.
Yeah. So it's – so we're going for it. I don't know if we'll hit it, but we're going for it. So this, I think – this is Nash Talks Texas article, and I think this is from – okay, Matt Miller's prospect rankings. He put out 600 prospects ahead of the draft. So we'll just go through that. All right. Number one, Kelvin Banks. I do think Kelvin Banks is going to get drafted.
Good. Yeah. Well done, Connor.
Yeah. I'm like, I would draft him for sure, I think.
Yo, the NFL Twitter and NFL draft Twitter really cracks me up because it's a bunch of like dudes who put like NFL scout in their Twitter bio. And they are just like a guy who lives in New Jersey. And like
they're just watching YouTube highlights.
Well, they watch highlights, like grinding film. I've been grinding film, and they watch like three highlights of a guy and make pronouncements about him. Yep. And they use football speak, but a lot of them use it incorrectly.
Yep.
So they'll be like, fires his hands with effective functional strength. And we're just like, dude, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But Kelvin Banks is a guy that they're pulling apart and overanalyzing. He's got 42 college starts, and I think 14 or 15 of them are against NFL drafted guys. And I think 10 of them are first round edges or second round edges.
I don't know why they're overthinking this.
They're vastly overthinking it. There's not a lot of guys his size with his feet, his intelligence, his attitude.
His
and they're like, well, occasionally lunges. It's like, yes. In a football game, you lose reps occasionally. That's how football works. Everyone has it in their mind that like J.J. Watt never lost a rep. I can pull up film of him getting pancaked. So
here was this. This has always stuck out with me with Banks, and it also showed me one of the flaws of the scouts sometimes. So when Banks was in high school, he was at a camp. I can't remember what it was, but he's a left tackle, right?
Yep.
For whatever reason that day, they didn't have a right tackle depth to run that. So Banks volunteered to do right tackle reps. And people are like, well, what's the difference? It's the difference in batting lefty or right.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference, you know? And so it's like them acting like it's the same. Dude, mirroring all of that, they have a ton of physical reps moving one way, one position, angling out in one way. So just switching is not easy. And so he lost some reps at right tackle that day. And the scouts were like down on him. I'm like, instead of taking the mental eval that he's the only one that stepped up and said, I'll switch sides so we can run this camp better. Y'all took that he switched and got beat twice, so he's not as good. That just like always stuck out to me with a flaw in the thinking of the scouts at the high school and the NFL level, when really what you should have gleaned from that is that he stepped up at the camp.
It's the same. It's the same thing as the athlete evaluation, right? Quandre Diggs. What to do with him? He played quarterback in high school and returned kicks, and he played safety. He also played wide receiver in certain.
What does he project as?
Yeah, I just don't see a clean projection. It's like they're trying. He's playing high school football. They're trying to win the game.
Hero position, and you should wonder why he's playing hero.
You should wonder why he has the ability to do all those things.
Yeah.
So, look, Banks is going to be great. I think people are dropping him in mocks. I think he's going to go higher than everyone thinks. I think he could go number 10.
Yeah, Yeah, I think people are wanting him to drop to the Texans because we have such a Houston-heavy audience. So that's mostly what I hear is like a Texan saying. But, man, they are overthinking this, dude.
Yeah, so we should also point out that this is power rankings of the player, not draft projections, correct?
I have no idea. I don't think it is draft projections. I think
it's power rankings.
Yeah.
These are my best players. So here's a weird thing about this draft, Connor. It's not a super talented draft in terms of depth. But the very best players in it, a lot of them play positions that aren't premium.
Yeah.
So like Tyler Warren from Penn State
can be better, but he'll go lower.
He is objectively one of the top five players in this draft at his position, right? However, tight end is not as big a deal as quarterback. So Cam Ward is going to go first, even though in last year's quarterback draft, he would have been like the fourth or fifth ranked guy.
Right.
So keep that in mind with the draft. Kelvin Banks will be pure need. I think it'll be under four.
Yeah, I think we're going to get three.
Yeah,
I think we're going to get Banks, Barron, and Golden.
I think it's going to be Banks, Barron, and Golden. Barron is a guy that I'm not surprised NFL draft dorks are super into after watching him, which I understand because no one ever caught the ball on him. He's great against the run. He's super smart, and he can play multiple positions. The criticism of him is hilarious because it's like, spent most of his career at nickel, only 1 year at corner.
Yeah.
And it's like, so he was a dominant nickel and a dominant corner.
Right. He won the Thorpe in 1 year.
By the way, if you'll recall, early in his career, we were like, we should play him at safety. Yeah. He's a very instinctive safety, and he's a good tackler. So this is a guy who can play.
And he played dime linebacker as well.
Well, that, yeah.
So it's like,
we're not getting into what the star position is versus the nickel.
Yeah.
But, this is a guy who's proven he can play all three DB positions at the NFL level, corner, nickel, safety.
Yeah.
This is like a no-brainer.
If everyone agrees you can't set yourself apart as a scout, so almost just to stand out from a crowd of like –
you have to be contrarian.
You have to be contrarian. And that's what's like the dumb thing with Banks. Like whoever the goofball was, they're like, I think he's a guard. And then like seven other parents pop up and like, yeah, he's a guard. And like it's just so dumb, man, how it starts.
Or they'll write things that are just like not relevant to the player. So they'll be like, Andrew Makuba, great hitter, really good with the ball in the air, excellent instincts, highly experienced player. Really grew in his last year at Texas after playing in a bad system at Clemson, blah, blah, blah. Ideally, you'd like him more if he was 6'2", 210.
It's and you're like, yeah. Okay.
He is not. Ideally, I would like you if your draft stuff was written at a higher level.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Like, evaluate the player that is.
Exactly. Yeah, they're doing like these platonic ideals. You know what I would like if he was – I would like him better if he was a first overall pick.
That's right.
It's just like, okay, well, that's not what we're talking about.
I would like him better if he had superpowers.
So out of the Texas players, who's going to be a Pro Bowl player and be a veteran 15 years from now? It's Jahdae Barron to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like there's no question. Like,
he'll be playing when he's like 36.
Dude, exactly. Because even when the athleticism leaves, it doesn't matter. He's going to be so savvy and so veteran that he could be three steps slower. He's going to be in the right spot.
Yep.
So, like, there's just, like, don't overthink Barron. Don't overthink Banks. I know you guys get paid to be critical in that regard, and I'm fine with that. We do, too. But don't outsmart yourself on some of these stuff. All right. Matthew Golden.
I love Matthew.
So do I.
Incredibly strong hands. Good route runner. Good diversity. I think he's a better deep ball guy than he was able to show with Quinn Ewers last year.
Mm-hmm.
For reasons. We don't need to get into all that. But I just think he's a guy that really blossomed. And talk about a guy just like Makuba I mentioned before, really benefited from coming to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a first rounder if he stays at Houston.
Right.
It's just not happening. So I think he's just a great worker. And, you know, he's an interesting guy in that he's a mid-sized receiver. He's like 6 feet, 195. If you look at him, he's really well put together. And he's really strong. Like, if you watch Amon-Ra St. Brown for the Lions, very similar player, very built very similarly. You could just tell he's physically strong. Like, so people always look at, like, is he a big receiver? Is he a, you know, small receiver? That's relevant. It's good. But also it just helps to be strong for your size. He's just hard to deal with. And guys,
I think, frame the ball and keep it.
Yeah. And also I think guys are scared to press Golden because I think he's physically strong. And if he runs through you a little bit, you're not going to regain that step because he runs a 4.39 40. So
4.29.
Oh, my bad. 4.29. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think he's a no brainer first rounder. I think he'll be a very productive NFL receiver. I'm glad we had him for a year. I wish we had him for two.
Yeah. And his ability to get open in the red zone, that's a skilled receiver too. And
very, very much so. That little pylon route he ran with Quinn Ewers, amazing.
That's all skill, man. And so, yeah, shout out Golden. I'm in the Dallas area, so it's like if he goes to the Cowboys, I feel good. But deep in my soul, I'm like, man, let him go somewhere that they can maximize him. With our players, it's sad. I'm like, don't go to the Cowboys, please. But regardless, you'll be made a millionaire. You'll be all right, even if you're not on the best football team.
Hey, man, if I got drafted by Jacksonville, I'd be
fine. I would say, you're going to be all right, dude. You're going to be
all right. It's all good.
Yep. All right. Our fourth ranked is Alfred Collins.
Late bloomer. It all came together late for Alfred. He played fantastically well for us. Honestly, there was no drop-off from Murphy Sweat to Collins. I mean, he didn't have quite as many, like, oh my God plays as those guys.
Yeah.
But from a down-to-down consistency standpoint, phenomenal. And his oh my God plays happened repeatedly on third and fourth and short. Multiple times he got double teamed, stuffed the double team, and then made the tackle for a loss or no gain. I mean, did that half a dozen times last year. Just absolutely amazing. I don't know why people kept doubling him and running at him because it happened over and over. He played really well. The bummer for him is I think that there may be a medical. I think they've detected some stuff in him they don't love. And that could affect his draft stock. But his traits, as Nash points out here, very rare. Height, weight, wingspan, arm length. He got really strong by the end of his career because he finally accepted, I'm an interior player, right? Because Pete Kwiatkowski early on was like, hey, we're going to play you at different positions, but you can't anchor very well inside. And Collins is like, well, I want to shoot gaps. I'm a quick guy.
I'm a four eye or I'm a five.
Yeah, I'm a three technique, and I want to shoot gaps, and you know, I want to play outside a defensive end. Mm-hmm. And Kwiatkowski is like, you know, sorry, I want you to be able to eat blocks.
Well, that's why people kept running at him because the word on him was he was a pass rusher, and he was like, dude, that Murphy Sweat Collins year, we had like the top three pass rushing defensive tackles in PFF. Like, yes. It was crazy, dude. So the words were just that Collins was just like this pass rusher. And so they kept trying to run at him, but he developed into a full player.
Another underrated aspect of Collins, but partly related to his height and his wingspan, a lot of batted balls, a lot of tip balls at the line of scrimmage. Very good at getting penetration, not jumping, and then getting his arms up, which you've got to instruct defensive linemen to do because quarterbacks will pump fake him up in the air, right?
Yeah.
He was great about that, and he created multiple interceptions and turnovers doing that throughout his career at Texas. It's an important little value add that doesn't always make it in the scouting report, but it changes games. So I think Collins is going to be a really good pro, probably a second rounder. If he drops to the third, it's the medical.
Yeah. But also, man, that I'll never forget that Colorado interception where he just fell backwards and caught it from the defensive end position. That's like a legendary play.
It helps to have good athletes all across the field.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt. Number 68 in the rankings, we have Isaiah Bond. Someone that, man, it would have been, if he could have stayed healthy, that would have been super cool, man.
Yeah.
Earlier in the year, he was doing some awesome stuff, fast player. But, man, what did Sark describe it as? Like a Lamborghini. If one thing's tweaked on it, it won't run as well. And yeah, that's a bummer. What could have been type of thing with Bond, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's some value to having an SUV wide receiver, like Golden, that's. That's a Toyota 4Runner. Bond is definitely more of a Porsche or a Lamborghini. I don't know what to do with him with the legal troubles and all that. I don't know how that's going to mark against him. Yeah. And I don't know how valid those legal issues are. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah. Kind of a bummer. Quinn Ewers. Did you watch the Gruden video yesterday? I did.
No, I heard it's good. I haven't had a chance to watch it.
It's just fun to watch him teach quarterbacks and that kind of stuff. Some of his analysis early was totally wrong. Like, just being honest. Like, they open it with talking about...
that you're a big, strong guy in the pocket. Shrug off tackle.
A couple of things that were just objectively not correct. So, like, the first thing was he's like, man, you got that deep ball accuracy. And it's like, mathematically, he just doesn't, you know? And so it's like, there were a couple of things where I had to accuse Gruden of being a highlight watcher. And then the one that also, Quinn's working on his feet, changing his drop, which he needs to do.
Yep.
And then Gruden and the NFL told me he needs to do. And Gruden's like, why are you doing that, man? You've been having your drop your whole life, man. He's like, don't be a bobblehead quarterback just saying yes. And I was like, Gruden, he absolutely has to change his drop. That's why the NFL is telling him. His feet are inconsistent. But that's why Gruden, some of this stuff was Gruden watching highlights and not really digging into it. But
I heard you're lifting weights, Quinn. I don't like that. It's going to make you inflexible. You need to get down to about 180.
Some of the stuff that was just objectively – and I get it, man. He's not watching every snap for every quarterback.
It's a TV product, man.
It's an entertainment product. And him teaching Quinn, that's the cool part, man, where they're teaching you plays and projections and you're seeing a quarterback have to learn in real time. That's the real value of it. But – and then his brother was super bearish on Quinn. Jay said that he thinks Quinn's a sixth or seventh rounder and a career backup on a video with Colt McCoy. And then Colt McCoy – was very rosy on Quinn. Colt's too close to the situation in some regards, you know.
Colt's not going to badmouth the Texans.
Correct. I watch Colt's stuff, and he's pretty much every quarterback you would think is a first rounder by how he talks about it because he's such a sweet guy, and he's been there, you know, so he doesn't want to criticize. But he said, I think, ultimately, Quinn would be second or third round, and I think Colt's more correct there on where he'll be drafted than Jay Gruden because Jay Gruden was really bearish. So, we watched Kurt Warner as well. Kurt Warner's video on him was that Quinn predetermines where the ball's going to go.
Yeah, I think Kurt Warner had really good insights.
Yeah. And so I thought he had the best video on him as a quarterback, and I thought he was the most correct. He talked about inconsistency in footwork, predetermining where the ball would go, a.k.a. if my downfield's not open, I'm automatically going to the check down. I'm vaguely looking at 2 and 3, but I'm only scanning 2 and 3 on my way to a check down.
Yep.
So it's been all over the place with NFL guys, which also shows you'll hear fans be like, they're NFL guys. Like, how could you argue with them? I'm like, well, how could I not? They all have different opinions. It's like, someone has to be kind of, there's a range here, even of NFL guys that get it right and get it wrong. So I think,
I mean, honestly, the best. There's a range of knowledge from former players, right? Mm-hmm. Like you talk, like anytime I talk to Drew Kelsen about stuff or I ask him specific things, I'll learn something about football because he played, but he's also very thoughtful.
Correct.
There are former players that I'm shocked they were able to get their pads on to get on the field. Like literally they say the dumbest things and someone like Kelsen will just be shaking his head, you know? But it's just they have a range of opinions just like everybody else.
Correct. And
there's specific things they can give you insight on having played, but sometimes the theoretical stuff, they'll just be like, just run the damn ball. And it's like, it's a 9-man front, dude.
Right.
Count the box.
Yeah. Yeah. Like human beings, there's a range there.
That's right.
But that's all to say that Quinn has issues and positives. And I think to me, I'm drafting Quinn, watching every snap. I'm drafting Quinn in probably the third or fourth, but that's gut feeling. And I'm not putting that in context of who goes before him, who needs quarterbacks. Is there going to be a run on quarterbacks? Blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Andrew Makuba.
All right. We already talked about Makuba. Makuba, man, Barron's my favorite. Makuba's got to be my second favorite. Dude.
Well, here's a great thing for Andrew. He had a phenomenal senior year at Texas. He showed out and really getting out again. Another example, a guy left a situation where he'd started a bunch of games at Clemson. He wasn't being used properly. Clemson didn't have a very well-schemed defense, which I commented on. And right after the season, they fired their DC. So obviously Dabo saw the same stuff I did. Makuba really flourished at Texas, really improved his stock. And he was a national name. Like, people knew who he was after that year, because helps when you knock a bunch of people unconscious on the field, right?
But also just smart in space too. It wasn't just a dummy hitter. Like, he was jumping in.
What's going to really help him is this development of the two high and this proliferation of it in the NFL. Yeah. Because Makuba is not a big guy.
Right.
He hit like a big guy because he's reckless, but he's 180, 185 pounds, like, once the season starts, right?
Yeah.
And he will really benefit from this two high. I think he'll get dinged a little bit on his tackling, which sounds like a funny thing to say. We just talked about what a hard hitter he is.
Hitters normally have that trade-off.
Hitters often have that trade-off, because if you're going to fly in there like a maniac and hurt someone,
you're going to miss. Remember, who was it? B.J. Foster for us, that, like, only knew how to hit you like a missile, but he couldn't.
And he would also, like, concuss other defenders all the time.
Exactly. He was a danger to everyone.
Yeah, his career ended in a weird way. Like, my last memory of him is, like, jogging on a play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Makuba is going to really benefit from this proliferation of two high. He's not a drop in the box safety at the NFL level, obviously. But the more he can get some space, see the field, see things develop. And one thing that's really impressive about him, he moves laterally as well as he does backwards and forwards. It's like, he's like a Roomba. It's wild. Like, he can move side to side. I swear to God, he runs a 4.5 40 shuffling sideways. So,
dude, he just reads concepts. Like, when he's back there, he's like, okay, the post is coming over here. That means the dig's coming behind me. And he just finds this. That's what I would get with Makuba, is how smart he was, athletic, how he could just freak quarterbacks out.
Yeah, Texas, one thing that's really noticeable about Sark since he arrived, our football IQ is pretty high.
Yeah.
Like, collectively. Like, we've got a lot of guys who understand the game of football. And you could say they were taught that, or maybe we recruit to that.
Yeah.
But, dude, we were a pretty dumb football team for about 10 years.
Dude, yes.
I mean, situationally stupid.
Yeah, dude.
Like, guys who did not understand the big picture.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've got a lot of guys like that. So, props to the players and props to the coaches who either recruit that or develop that.
100%. Jake Majors, man, the general.
Does that seem high?
It does seem high.
Boy, that's...
For a power ranking, I wouldn't put Jake above Gunner, I don't think. I wouldn't put him above Cam either. So... Yeah.
I love it. I mean, dude, that guy, was he at 50-something starts at Texas?
Crazy, man.
Unbelievable.
And people were trying to bench him the entire time, dude.
He did something really interesting, Connor. He started for 3 years and was basically the same player every year, partly because he was injured. He didn't get good off seasons in.
Yeah.
His last 2 years, he was markedly better. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a good center. Whereas his first 3 years, I think he was an average or above average center. And that's really interesting. You don't see that happen a lot. But again, it happened. You know, he stuck around and it all came together, kind of like the Alfred Collins of the offense.
Well, just like a stabilizing force, like when we sucked, you know, like to be able to grow throughout the whole thing. And then the quote here, football cyborg. That's what I mean, every time I talk to sources close to the program, it was how smart he was.
Yeah.
And how, like, that's what it was always like. This guy understands protections and all of that stuff. So, and dude, that's a center, man.
So, like, not to relive history or do
hyperbolic?
No, I'm sorry. The counterfactual. The OU game that we lost to Dylan Gabriel in the last second drive. Two biggest things there. One, our defense was not well prepped for that game and their game plan. Two, Jake Majors going out early.
It was made a huge difference.
We had about a quarter and a half where we couldn't run offense because they were running a lot of kind of gimmicky stuff. and taking advantage of a guy who was thrust. I mean, Connor Robertson, God bless the guy. He did his best. He was thrust into a very difficult situation.
100%, yeah.
He couldn't make line calls. He couldn't make the adjustments. Once we got into half, if you'll recall, Quinn Ewers came out and sliced and diced that OU defense.
Yeah.
But we lost about a quarter and a half where basically I think we would have put 7 or 10 points on the board and it wouldn't have come down to a Dillon Gabriel drive. So him going out was a huge deal in that game. Really, really hurt us.
Yeah. Man, I hope Jake has a long career, man. Because as far as like what you're asking for in center with intelligence and stability, I mean, that's what you're asking for, and he exemplified that for us.
I also feel like when he got healthy, he had good off seasons, and he got way stronger.
Yeah.
And you could see it on the field. He was a much stronger player.
Yeah.
He wouldn't get stonewalled by nose tackles the way he had previously, you know, early in his career.
Yeah. Next up, Gunnar Helm, baby.
Love Gunnar. Man, I'm going to miss that guy. The funniest thing, Connor, before the season, you know, I write my Thinking Texas Football preview. And still available on Amazon. It's not dated at all.
No, always topical.
But I remember being like, Gunnar Helm is going to surprise people. He's going to catch 30 balls.
Yeah.
And it's like, try 60 or 70. And also, he'll be our number two receiver.
I did not predict that. I didn't predict that level. But I was always standing on the table from Cherry Creek. I was like, he's a downfield threat. We keep using him as a 12 personnel block.
He played flex tight end at Cherry Creek.
Yeah. And so it's like, go watch his tape. And so I always thought we were underutilizing him, not this year, but previous years. I was like, why is he just staying in blocking? I'm like, slip him out because he can catch the seams. And of course we did. So, man, he was one of the coolest stories of the year.
So a little insight. Cherry Creek is basically the Westlake / Lake Travis of Denver. It's the Denver suburbs. And it's kind of the wealthiest area, and they have a football system. So my son played tackle football for the first time last year, and we played several Cherry Creek Little League teams. They all run the identical offense. Mm-hmm. They all run the identical defense.
Yep.
And they basically put in their systems in like fourth grade, mm-hmm. and they run the same plays that they run in high school, and the same halfback pass, the same everything. And it was just hilarious to watch these little robot machines out there executing. And they inculcate that stuff. And by the time, you know, they're starting this when they're 10, by the time they're 17, can you imagine like the advantages they have running that system for 7 years?
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
Good programs do that, man. They start in peewee and then middle school, of course, whatever you're going to feed into is going to have the offense.
That's right. So, we had none of that. We ran something completely different every year, like, you know.
Well, I went to school in Denton, and Denton's.
Oh, you had that.
So, yeah, we had that. We were running our base inside zone play since 34 black.
Well, I remember when we played Westlake, one of our – I was coming off the field with one of our defensive guys. He's like, what was the name of their quarterback? I forgot. They played for the state championship the year we played them, and – they lost, but their quarterback, I can't remember his name, but he was good. They had a bunch of good quarterbacks. But we're coming off the field. This guy on the defense was like, what was their quarterback doing right before the play? And I was like, he was audibling.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? Why would he, like, what is he doing? Like, why would he do that? And yeah. He's like, it's Westlake. They've been running this since they saw our defense, and he has four different plays he can check into.
Crazy.
And he's like, why would you let a high school guy do that? I was like, well, they scored.
Yep. Yeah. It's unfair advantage. You realize when these feeder schools. All right. Cameron Williams, a player that I still would like to have returned.
But I think he would have really improved his stock if he'd returned. Sadly, our last memory of him is an injured Cam Williams.
Yeah. That's
struggling to get out of a stance and getting bypassed and creating that.
And instead of once again, taking kind of the wrong lesson there, right? Like Cam was like, look, I'm hurt, but I want to try to help the team versus Ohio State.
Well, that's on the coaches. Yep. Sorry. Like your job is to evaluate the players if they can go or not. Yep. So
my thing is like with the scout, right? You could take the wrong lesson. You're like, man, Jack Sawyer was beating him like a drum.
Oh, I don't think you know, NFL. I don't think actual NFL scouts view that. They can tell the guy's hurt.
Yeah. But if
he would come back, Connor, I think he would have been a first round draft pick.
So do I.
That's a shame. I understand the desire to get in the league and earn a paycheck and all that, but dude, we have NIL now. You're not like you and your family are going to struggle.
I think there's probably some keeping up with the Joneses, right? You come into class with Banks, you want to leave with the class with Banks, you know?
Dude, I think you got to maximize your earning potential, and you only get a chance to sign that first contract once. And obviously the second contract, once you prove yourself, is how you make good money. But if you could be a first round draft pick in the NFL, the signing bonus alone is, yeah,
you got to go.
Yeah. I wish he would come back.
Me too. Jaden Blue. Also, yeah, a player I think was quick to the draft.
Disappointing 4.38 40.
Yeah.
Hey, all I know is this: when he's not hurt and he's on the field in pads, he's very fast.
Dude, he's crazy fast.
He's going to be very interesting. I think he's appealing in the late rounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a big running backs or a commodity guy. Other than a small handful of special guys,
right?
Everyone else, just it's the dude.
There's a minimum threshold.
Yeah, there's a minimum threshold, and how good's your O-line and what's your system? That's all that matters. So I like him as like a poor man's Jahmyr Gibbs. And I think that will be the sell on him. He's not as natural a pass catcher as you would like, but I think that can be worked on too.
Well, this is what's confusing with Blue. He had some of the strongest hands I've seen of a running back in high school. And like, I mean, I'm talking about like golden level, quick out red zones, framing balls.
Oh, wow.
Like he had incredible hands. And he was so fast with good hands that there were even talks of him at slot. But it's Blue's consistency, man. When Blue is showing up at the top of his ability, mentally checked in, all of that stuff, Blue is a problem. But on the flip side, whenever he's having an off day, remember that game where Sark gave him like 900 reps?
Yeah.
You know, but he was having a bad game still. He had a bad game, but still went for like 150 yards, that weird game for him. That's the trick with Blue, man. Like, I like Blue. I think he's a great player when he's maxing out. But when you see that he's distracted,
there's some front runner to him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's like, dude, if you can get the most out of Blue, he's a good player, and you're going to find a ton of value with that speed. And like I said, whenever he is locked in, his hands are nice. It's just Blue is a very interesting player. I hear, and I can hear both sides of the argument, but I land on really liking Blue when he maximizes what he can do.
Yeah, I like him late. Like I said, he could be a poor man's Jahmyr Gibbs.
Cool.
Talk about a contrast.
Yeah.
Mr. Consistency, Mr. Physical, smart, hardworking. A lot of people, like, I don't think they understood how good he was, how well he played for us.
Right.
And just a mature, consistent guy. Another one of these Louisiana guys that, like, these three-star, really good athletes that you're not sure how they're going to project. Malcolm Roach type guys that they just level up. And Louisiana's East Texas. They're just full. It's full of those guys, right? So I love Sorrell. I think he's going to land in a very physical culture. I think the Steelers or Ravens are going to love him. And I think he can really help his stock if he can show that he can play like 3-4 outside linebacker. Like the strong side linebacker in the 3-4. If he can do that, I think he'll really help his stock.
I think people with Sorrell, why they don't realize how good he was, is he was like a boiling frog. Like his development was so consistent.
Yeah.
What we notice is when a player is all right and then elite the next year, that's when we go, wow. What
we don't notice is he goes from a 5.5
yeah,
to 6.5.
To a 7.5. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what Sorrell, his trajectory was just right. This is flipped and mirrored, but there we go. This way would work better for you guys.
Yep.
But that's what Sorrell was. Like, we noticed not good to great, like very easily, but Sorrell just every single year, better, better, better. It was crazy.
100%.
Shout out, Barry. Yeah.
Oh, there. Yeah. I'm glad we said good things about him.
Yeah.
But yeah, what negative could you say about a guy like that? Yeah, he's just epitomizes the Texas culture, and I think he's going to do well. I'll say he does not have a single "oh my god" trait.
Yep.
Which is what you want in a like a first round edge in the NFL, right?
Yep.
But what he has is he's good at everything.
Correct.
And that is valuable in the NFL. That is really valuable. I think there's multiple teams with certain cultures that will fall in love with that guy, and they'll go grab him in the fourth round. And both sides will be very happy with that fit.
Yep, and a stabilizing force in the locker room.
100%.
146, Vernon Broughton, a player that also proud of his ability in his final year, a player that wanted to be a basketball player originally and had kind of those problems where it's like he's a basketball level athlete. Can he be a football player? And the answer was yes, he was able.
Well, he had to remake his body and learn how to anchor. He was a guy who would get blown off the ball quite a bit. He always could rush the passer because he had that quickness and that arm length. He can grab offensive linemen and swim them before they can even make contact. Good, quick pressure interior, which is very valuable at any level of football, especially the NFL. I don't think at the NFL level he'll be a run stopper. I think he'll be adequate at best, which is why he's down here. You could easily see himself making an impact as a passing down specialist. That's not really a thing anymore in the NFL. So remember,
yeah, the DPR, NFL, the DPR is leaving.
Well, do you remember in the 80s and 90s, would it be like, all right, let's run off our run stoppers and bring our pass rushing unit on? Like the NFL, they throw on first down as much as they throw on third. So that's not a thing anymore. But I do think that there's value in that he can play in a three-man front, four-man front. He could play defensive end in some instances on a four-man front. He could play in the interior. So everyone wants Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs. The guy you can play at nose tackle, you can play at defensive end, you can play three-man front, four-man front, you can gap him, you can play him straight up. Vernon Broughton's not that, but the more things you can do, the more you make yourself available to be drafted by more teams.
Correct.
And that's where Broughton, he's sort of a lesser Alfred Collins in that regard, right? Although he might be as good or better pass rusher than Alfred. So he's certainly an NFL player. He's definitely getting drafted. And talk about a guy who improved over time. You know, yep. He's a guy that really struggled early in his career, but boy, he really improved last year. And then this year sealed it. So really proud of that guy.
Me too. Big NASA.
NASA. So I think NASA is going to be scheme and team specific. He is an outstanding pass protector at guard. Like really, really good. He's not a guy who's going to get a lot of movement in the run game.
Which is weird, right? He almost seems, because you're like, wow, look at his size. He well, must be a road grader, but that's not
think,
the case.
Yeah, you think like, hey, a guy's 6'5", 325. I bet he's a great run blocker. He doesn't get low.
Right.
And he doesn't have that explosion out of his stance, that initial strike. But when he gets his hands on you and you're trying to pass rush him, you can't bull rush him. And you're not going to run around him because he's got good technique. So I think that he'll be a specific fit for a team that really emphasizes pass protection. And then they zone block on offense. They're screening to block. They're not trying to drive people off the ball and run blocking. That's where he's going to fit.
And this is kind of where we're getting to where the rubber meets the road, right?
Yep.
Because right here, he would be the 14th. Okay. And did we do 14 last year or 12?
12.
Okay, we did 12. I think we're going to beat our record with Vernon Broughton.
I think it's going to be lucky 13. That's my projection.
So do I. I feel like Hayden is where you're getting to the line. Yeah. Could happen, couldn't happen type of thing.
Yep.
So I think this is where it gets tricky. And he would be number 14. Of course, we're trying to get to 15 to match Georgia. But I think Hayden Connor is where the line for me is. I think we get to 13. I feel I would bet on 13. And so Hayden Connor could happen, wouldn't be surprised, but also wouldn't be surprised the inverse. But also what I like about Hayden Connor is, remember at the beginning of NIL, he bought property.
Yeah. Obviously a smart guy.
And half of our team were buying chains.
Yeah.
And when NIL came, everybody was showing their chains with whoever the Austin guy is.
He's like, I bought a condo.
And then he's like, yeah, I bought a rental property for passive income. So Hayden Connor's gonna be all right, however it goes, man. So that'll be good. And looks like the money that he did make in college, if he doesn't make it in the NFL, it was put to good use. Man, Silas Bolden, another what could have been, man.
I feel like I need old Silas.
And he, I mean, he has an all-time Texas football play. That OU play is
awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the pantheon of like top 100 Texas football plays, top 50 Texas football plays. So man, and what a way to make special teams fun in a year in a year when our special teams was really disappointing. Bolden was able to provide that spark for us, heart-stopping decisions on whether to catch it or fair catch it or not. But man, really like Bolden. As far as the NFL draft, unfortunately, I don't see it.
He's 150 pounds.
Yeah.
I'd bring him into training camp. There's no doubt.
Me too. And the mental eval is there. And also, man, go watch his Oregon State. You don't have to necessarily watch the Texas tape in that regard. Watch the OU play for sure. Watch when he did get opportunities, what happened. He made them. And then watch him at Oregon State.
He's just a dog.
Dude, the mental eval on the chart. He made the toughest catch I saw. Over the middle, he caught a slant and got smacked. And I hadn't seen really anybody else in the past couple years willing to make that catch.
Yep.
So, man, I hope he gets a shot. And I think ultimately everyone's going to make a – like, I think everyone's going to get undrafted free agent. I don't think anybody's just going to necessarily be sitting at home. All right. And then we have – David Benda, also a fan favorite, man. Love David Benda. Love his mentality. It's a bummer he got kind of passed in his final year, but Benda also made some of my favorite, like, as far as a run blitzer or something, dude. Benda, whenever he knew where he was headed and could meet a guy in the hole, he would smack dudes. So
hard hitter, smart guy, engineering major. So. Yeah. Whatever happens for the NFL or you know, undrafted free agent, promise you Benda's got a bright future.
Benda's going to have a good life regardless of how anything shakes out. Yeah. Yeah,
I would go hire that guy.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. And then Jermaine Lole.
Yeah, hanging it up. He's going to go try to coach. Good for him. Real shame. Talk about injuries crippling a guy's play. He played well for us last year, but if you ever get a chance to watch like young Jermaine Lole, who played at Arizona State before he got hurt, boy, he was really dynamic, but he had some really bad
injuries. I didn't even know he was going to be a GA for us.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
That's awesome, man. And that's always important too. It shows you what they think of players. If you get to be a GA, that means they like you.
No, we're going to have 9 defensive tackles on campus. We need as many coaches out there as possible.
So I think we're going to break the record for Texas. I think it's going to be – we're going to get 13.
Going 13 as well.
Which is also
three first-rounders.
With 3 first-rounders. Yep, I agree.
Not bad.
Especially, man, this team didn't have an NFL draft pick 3 years ago. Crazy. But also, we've shown fans – like sometimes we can get a little bit we just like a player for their heart. He's a Texas guy. But Sark's also shown us if you want to win, you need to be putting 11, 12, 13 guys in the NFL. It's about talent and development, baby. That was the real difference.
Hey, yeah, there's talented guys with heart as well.
Yeah.
So
we do kind of do this weird dialectic where it's like you either have heart or talented. It's like, hey, guys, Colin Simmons exists. All right. That was fun, Paul. It's always nice. I love talking about the NFL draft guys and looking back and giving those guys their props.
Yeah, we delivered overtime today. Hour 18. Look at that.
Look at that, guys. A little extra value for you.
Look at that.
All right, guys. Remember, on Friday, I want you guys to come hang out 3 o'clock. I think it's behind center field. Inside Texas Tailgate Giveaway brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors, guys. Go check it out. It's going to be awesome. I'm excited. Paul, thank you. Chat, you guys crushed it as usual. Have a wonderful day, y'all. Peace.